Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Dr. Matthew McGlasson. He treats dogs, but he says he's obsessed with cats. In fact, he has a book out called How to Rate a Cat. Rate any feline friend from their boopable nose to their sweet toe beans. Dr. McGlasson, who, by the way, you can find in social media, I think, everywhere. And we'll tell you how in a bit. Good morning, first of all.
Thank you, Steve. Super, super excited to be here.
All right. So let's talk about what this book is and how it was that this book came about to begin with.
Absolutely. Funny story. I just love celebrating all the awesome qualities that cats have on my social media pages. So we started this trend where I would do videos of patients in the hospital of cats, and I would rate them based on different qualities. It was just a really silly thing to do, like, you know, these beans are 8 out of 10, and this cat has fishy breath that's 7 out of 10 or whatever. So these videos kind of went viral and just became really, really popular. So I started having all these social media followers sending in requests, can you please rate my cat? Can you please rate my cat? So I ended up one day just posting, hey, would you guys really like me to give you a forum where I can rate your cats? And I got like 10,000 responses or something.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, we're on to something here. So I had a publisher reach out who's a crazy cat lady like myself. And she said, we really, you know, love what you do with cats. We have an idea for a book. And the cool thing about this book is we actually opened it up to our followers who are all cat obsessed, and they could send in their cats and what they think are the best qualities of their cats with pictures and everything. And we got, you know, like thousands of entries, and it was hard, but we picked 60 cats. So all the cats featured in the book are real cats, which I think is really special.
And the artwork, which demonstrates or shows each cat, is just beautiful. I have a favorite. I must say that, because these cats are from all over the world. And my favorite,
all over the world.
Yeah, is a cat named Newton. Newton happens to be from Chicago. And that is why Newton happens to be my favorite. Also, you write that Newt has the perfect nose, an ink blot nose. Would Rorschach see this nose? And it kind of looks like a Rorschach test. You know, is it a bat? Is it a bird? What is it? Remember those tests that we read about in high school or college? Well, that's what this
Absolutely.
Nose. Yeah, that's what this nose looks like. Actually, have you ever met a cat in your life? And you're a veterinarian who's now under oath, who you have not liked?
No. And I'll talk to colleagues who are like, oh, I really don't like, you know, the spicy cats, that type of thing. I love it. Like, I just appreciate cats. They're so honest, you know. Usually if you have, you know, what veterinary teams refer to as a spicy cat, which means they're maybe acting aggressive, it's just fear, you know. And I know you talk a lot about, you know, how to make, you know, vet visits more fear-free and then less traumatic for our cats, and that's what it all comes down to. But no, I love every cat.
Yeah, you know, do you think the cats are instead still, even today, misunderstood, even by veterinary professionals, let alone the general public?
100%, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, we're getting over this barrier where, you know, forever, dogs have been the economic driving force, you know, of veterinary hospitals, and cats have just been treated as small dogs, you know, unfortunately. And as you know, cats are very, very different, you know, very different than dogs. So I'm super excited. Just in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, you really see, and, you know, you're involved with all the conferences and everything as well. And there's really this huge cultural shift where people are realizing how amazing cats are. And, you know, some of the trends I'm seeing out there are amazing, where, you know, you see so many, you know, males adopting cats now, and how cats are, you know, getting adopted at a faster rate than dogs even sometimes. So super, super excited about the changes coming for cats.
You know, I think that there are many misconceptions or myths when it comes to dogs. I think that dogs, and I say this all the time, better understand us than we understand them. Having said that, there are far more myths or people think things that just aren't true about cats compared to dogs. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, I think cats are you know, just so special, but you know, they're much more independent than dogs a lot of times, and they don't like seek owner's approval as much and that type of thing. And you know, it really takes, I think, an understanding of cats to realize that, you know, they are just as loving as dogs, just in a different way. And you know, for me, like, I have four cats at the house, and like, each one has such a different personality, and they just bring our family so much joy.
Do you think that some people may say, and I'll tell you what they say in a minute about cats, and they say, and I quote, but they're terrible because blah, 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 they're awful because blah, blah, and they go on and on. And the answer is, for me anyway, it's clear you've never had a cat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny. There's this, I've been talking to a lot of people in the profession lately, and in my current role, I work with veterinary students all the time, and I started noticing this trend where like 75% of the vet students I talk to, you know, these are usually coming from families that have tons of animals. I always ask the question, are you a dog person or a cat person? And of course, there's no right answer. I'm just curious what they say. But so many students now are like, oh, I always grew up with dogs, and, you know, dogs are always the number one in our family. But, you know, since I got into vet school or since I moved out, I got a cat, and now I'm just totally obsessed with cats. I didn't realize before how amazing cats are. And you know, so I think that's what the whole world is kind of onto now, and that's why we're seeing this big cultural shift.
All right, so let's talk about some of those myths. I mean, there are behavior books I still have, veterinary textbooks even, let alone books to the general public, that say cats are antisocial, they're aloof. Can you address that? And we have about 1 minute before we have to break.
Yeah, I mean, I would say cats are just very, very unique. I mean, they all have very distinct personalities, just like people do, and I respect that. You know, out of our four cats, you know, I have one that literally follows me from room to room and, you know, never wants to be left alone. And then we have one cat who will pop in and it's convenient for her, but that's just her personality. But they're definitely very attuned to like our family's behavior, very, very loyal. And, you know, they are very loving. And gosh, I mean, they again, I said this already, but they just make our house so much more fun.
But are cats social or not? We'll answer that question and many others when it comes to cats. It's an all-cat program. Dr. Matt McGlasson, author of How to Rate a Cat, is here on WGN. We'll be right back. Steve Dale back with you on WGN with Dr. Matthew McGlasson, the author of this book, How to Rate a Cat. Did you ever think, Dr. McGlasson, when you went to veterinary school, that you would be writing a book about rating cats?
You know, I sure didn't. That was never in the cards for me, but here we are.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So we're talking about misconceptions, of which there are many, that people have about cats. And I'll be talking about declaw in a moment. I want to get to that. But it is said that cats are antisocial. And here's what I say. I mean, there are dogs. You come to some homes when the dog runs to the door and says, hello, hello, hello. I love you. I love you. I love you. Even though I've never met you before. But there are other dogs who run the opposite way, may even bark at you in fear. Well, they have unique personality. I know people that are antisocial. So I don't know that this is true. And actually, cats who are outdoors, generally, the so-called feral or community cats, they generally live with other cats. To my knowledge, government has not mandated cats do this. It's their choice to do this. And they do this for safety in numbers, but they don't do it like lions do or wolves do, which are truly social animals in a very different way. They are called facultatively social, is the fancy way to put it. So they live together, but they don't hunt together. They don't share food unless the queen has kittens. But they are nevertheless social in their own world and in our world. Can you comment on those who still say, but cats are antisocial?
I mean, exactly what you said. I think it just depends on the cat. And I wouldn't say that cats as a whole are antisocial at all. I mean, again, just looking at the cats that I interact with every day, you know, working in the practice, you know, you'll have clients that will come into a room and they open up their carrier and this is the cat that's never met you before. And they come, you know, bounding at and they're rubbing against you and purring, super, super social, outgoing cat. And you'll have the cats that are fearful and scared, you know, just like dogs and just like people. So I really think that it just completely depends on the cat. And cats have a wide, wide range of personalities, just like dogs, just like people, just like any other being. So I think that's definitely a myth. My cats definitely have, each one has their own unique personalities, and we love each one.
What about the notion that you cannot train cats?
Well, you can. I wish I could say that my cats do tricks. I feel like my cats have probably trained me more than I've trained them. But, you know, cats definitely prefer a routine. And, you know, I have lots of friends and colleagues that have trained their cats to do all sorts of tricks and things like that. And, you know, like we have a cat, our one three-legged cat from Dubai, Rushi. If we get the stroller out, she comes flying from wherever she is in the house and she climbs up and hops in the stroller. So she's ready to go. But, you know, our other three cats could care less about the stroller. So really depends on the cat. But, you know, cats are super, super intelligent. And if you really have it in your mind to train your cat to do a trick, it's possible.
I wonder if your cat has a green card. Cat from Dubai? You need to explain that.
Yes. So my special passion is special needs cats. So I have four cats, and three of those have special needs. But I posted a lot of content on social media, you know, featuring special needs cats. This rescue group in Dubai reached out to me because of that. They had this cat that had been hit by a car and had spinal damage, and one of her legs had to be amputated. And they said, would you be, you know, if we can ship this cat to you, would you be able to maybe find a home for her? Because, you know, the situation is really bad over there for stray cats. And I said, sure. Rushi flew from Dubai into Chicago, and we drove up to Chicago and got her and brought her here with the intention of fostering her. And we fell in love with her, and she never left, and she's hilarious. But then since then, we've brought over three more cats from that same group in Dubai and found homes for them. So it's kind of a little side passion project of ours.
Well, we mentioned your social media anecdotally, sort of, a couple of times, but we have not pointed out where people can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So at Dr. Matt McGlasson, just DR period Matt McGlasson, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Threads. Yeah, all those, all the big ones.
Hey.
I'm there. And, you know, my pages are, there's a little bit of education mixed in there, but mostly it's just fun. It's talking about, you know, how amazing pets are and how we can celebrate that human-animal bond, and then a big emphasis on cats and why cats are so amazing.
Well, and they are amazing. And I want to talk more about how amazing they are. One thing they do, though, is they scratch. That's a natural behavior for cats. I haven't talked to you about this off the air, but I suspect I know where you fall on declaw. And you know, state after state, more and more of them, and I'll talk more about this in a moment, are saying, oh, you know what? We oppose declaw so much that we're going to ban the practice. What do you think?
Yeah, I think declawing cats should be banned everywhere, and I'm definitely seeing that trend. I mean, it's really rare to find a practice that still performs declaws. You know, and I think that's a cultural thing too. Like growing up, and you know, I graduated from vet school in 2003. When I graduated, like going into the practice I worked at there, I'm you know, ashamed to say that back then, like in the practice, me coming in as a new vet, like declaw was something that was offered. So it's like, okay, we declaw cats if that's what clients want. Looking back now, I feel really, really bad that I ever did that. You know, none of my cats are declawed, obviously, and I really, you know, we do not do that at the practices I worked at. I work for Mission Vet Partners now, and we don't do that in any of our practices all over the country. So I think it's really, really going out of fashion, thank goodness, because it was really a cruel practice when you look back.
What do you tell clients that say, oh, but my cat is scratching at the sofa and I want to declaw my cat?
Well, I mean, I say that, you know, cats are natural scratchers, and I can never tell you that if you buy a $10,000 sofa, your cat may not scratch it here and there. But the reality is, if you offer alternatives that are, you know, appealing to cats, you know, there's all sorts of different scratching pads and scratching surfaces. And there's tons of studies and research you can read on this where, you know, putting it, you know, at a vertical thing and making sure that it's stable, and different cats like different textures. But if you do all those things and give your cat a spot to scratch, as well as trimming their nails, you know, occasionally, and keeping up with that type of thing, then, you know, I really think you can live in a house with a cat without having shredded furniture.
Absolutely true. I agree with everything you say. And Dr. Matt McGlasson has more to say. How to rate a cat. Rate any feline friend from their boopable nose to their sweet toe beans. Dr. Matthew McGlasson will be back on WGN after this. By now, I think most people know that a declaw isn't a matter of just clipping nails. It truly is an amputation. So bend your finger, not that finger, don't point that finger at me, another finger, just bend it at the knuckle. And that's where it's, imagine cutting off all your fingers at the last knuckle. That's what a declaw is. And it's for our own convenience. And the nonsense, and it is nonsense, well, someone might be immune suppressed. Well, you know what? The UK, I can give you a list of countries that don't declaw, and they have people that are immune suppressed, and they survive cats. We don't need to declaw cats. And something we know a lot more about, cats are more likely, after being declawed, to suffer pain for a lifetime. We also know better how to manage their behavior so they're scratching where we want them to. Do not declaw your cat. So how do you rate a cat? That's the name of the book. How to Rate a Cat. Dr. Matthew McGlasson is the author of the book. And clearly, and he admits to this, he's obsessed with cats. If there's one thing you want people to know about cats, what would that be?
That would be that I would say pretty much universally, if you go into a shelter or a cat cafe and you adopt a cat who needs a home, not only will you save their life, but your life will also be very, very much more happy.
You know, I love that answer. So much research has been done, but yet not enough, about dogs. You know, petting a dog lowers our blood pressure, all these things that we've heard about just looking at a dog. My favorite study is this. There was one study that was done where people watched a Lassie movie. And then after the movie, they peed into a cup. And this is true. And all these measurements were done for folks to see what their level of cortisol was before the movie compared to after the movie. And their cortisol levels went down. That's a quote-unquote stress hormone. That was just watching a movie, not even actually being with a dog. Not a lot of studies have been done on the benefits of cats. There have been some, including how purring, this is fascinating to me, may even help the frequency, might even help to heal broken bones. If I don't know if you've heard that or not, but one study indicated that. But there, I don't think there have been enough studies that have been done regarding the benefits of living with cats.
I agree. 100%. And I, you know, it's funny. I see all these things because I'm on my social channels, and the videos I post, I have interactions. I have the benefit of having interactions with tens of thousands of people every day. So I get to see kind of like the themes from all over the world. And there is definitely something that having a cat reduces your stress. And there's these silly ways that I can tell you that. One is, like, I did a video where I said, like, you know, here's the key to reducing stress. And I basically just walk up and I bury my face in my cat, right? And then, you know, thousands of comments and everyone sharing videos. Like, people do that. When people are stressed, they go and they squeeze their cat or they put their face in their cat's fur. And there's something telling them that when I'm stressed, you know, hanging out with my cat is going to lower my blood pressure, make me feel better, reduce my stress. Like, there's something to it. And like you said, there are some studies finally coming out that are illustrating that, but we already know that.
Yeah. Well, you already know that. Absolutely true. Yeah. So cats do benefit us in all sorts of different ways. And one of those ways might also benefit cats, Dr. McGlasson. I think it should be a law. So I'll go to Washington, D.C. with you, and we'll try to get this passed as a law, where once a day or twice a day, people actually interact with their cat with play. They actually use an interactive toy of some sort and play with their cat. I suggest that it's probably as good for the people playing with their cat as it clearly must be for cats. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first, there's the benefit of having that human-animal bond, you know, like interacting with your cat. That's so important. All these little things that you do with your cat that may seem routine or may seem trivial, like, it's really, really important at the end of the day. You know, you're building that bond with your pet. But then the other thing we see is, you know, unfortunately, we have this, you know, with all these indoor kitties now, which is awesome, but a lot of them aren't getting exercise like they should, and maybe their diets aren't what they should be, and their exercise is at a point where we're seeing this obesity crisis. And we definitely know that everybody loves a chonky cat. They're super cute. But we know that cats that are overweight and aren't getting enough activity, that really predisposes them to tons of medical conditions and shortens their lives. So any type of play you can do to increase that activity level is huge.
61%. That's the number of cats that are overweight or obese, right? So that is, I want to make a point of this. That's a problem. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, people will say, well, that's okay. You know, everything is, no, we're shortening their lifespan. But I also believe impacting their quality of life. I mean, many cats, obese cats, can't even reach back to groom themselves. Well, to me, that's fundamentally what being a cat is, being able to groom yourself. And if you can't do that, I suggest those cats may well even be depressed. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. You know, if you're overweight to the point where you can't groom yourself, which is a huge part of being a cat, you know, cats are just, they keep themselves meticulously clean. So if they can't do that, huge problem. And then really hard on their joints. So we're seeing, you know, this big realization of how many cats are suffering from osteoarthritis and joint pain. And one of the major things that contributes to that is being obese.
All right, I was going to ask you this later, but you're leading me right into it, so I will ask right now. You know, I asked you if you could magically give people a message, and I loved your answer. You know, the cats are beneficial for us health-wise, and in fact, that is likely true. In fact, certainly true. But the answer that I might have given, and I want you to comment on this, is that people don't see their veterinarian often enough with their cat. Probably it's true for dogs, but definitely, cats are under-medicalized still. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely, and very, very true. You know, we would love to get our dogs in more, but when you look at the statistics for cats, it's really, really sad how far behind we are with getting our cats in for their wellness checks. We see, you know, pretty good compliance with people bringing their cats in when they're kittens and getting them spayed and neutered. So, like, that first 6 to 8 months of life, we see them a lot. And then a lot of these cats, we don't see them for, like, 5, 6 years, you know, until they get older or there's some medical problem. So I think some of it, I think there's many factors there. I think some of it is, you know, as a veterinary community, we've not done a great job of educating our clients on how important that routine care is and, you know, annual wellness checks and annual diagnostics and things like that. Cats are, it's an evolutionary trait. They're really, really good at hiding disease. So the problem is by the time you start noticing something that's really obvious with your cat at home, they've usually had that disease process going on for a long time. So that's where good wellness care comes in, you know, doing lab work once a year, catching early kidney disease. All of these types of things are so, so important. So that's one of the factors is just not, you know, I think we've done a poor job educating clients. And then the other is, I mean, let's be honest, it's sometimes really stressful to get your cat to the vet.
Right? I want
to
stop you there. I want to stop you there because I want to talk. You might know that is a passion of mine. So I want to talk more about getting your cat to the vet. And you can. How to Rate a Cat. Dr. Matthew McGlasson is here on WGN. We'll be right back. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. He says he's obsessed with cats. How to Rate a Cat, Dr. Matthew McGlasson. We're talking about getting cats to the veterinarian. And one thing is, people often don't know because cats are like magicians. They hide illness, and they're really good at it. So people oftentimes just don't know that their cat hasn't been feeling well for weeks, months, whatever it might be. But the other issue is getting the cat to the veterinarian. And I think we've gotten a little better at that, Dr. McGlasson. However, I think you're right. I think just when the carrier comes out and the cat is at the border to Mexico or Canada, either one, with a passport, waiting to get in because the cat wants to escape. I mean, you have to run around the house to grab the cat by the tail. The cat's screaming. You feel bad. The cat feels worse than bad. Maybe is thinking literally at that point, I'm going to die. And this person I love is doing this to me. So this is all, this whole scenario, I think, has to change.
Agreed. Agreed. And I'll go back to the very first thing you said, which is when the carrier comes out. And if I could give one tip to all of my cat caregivers out there, please, please, please don't leave your cat carrier down in the garage covered in cobwebs and then get it out once a year when it's time to go to the vet. Your cat is super smart. They know when that thing comes out, that smelly carrier from the garage with cobwebs and roaches inside, oh my gosh, we're going to do something scary. We're going to the vet. Leave those carriers out where your cat can interact with them. Like we have carriers out in multiple spots in our house. And our cats just love to sleep in them and hang out in them. So it's a safe space for them. You know, it becomes a place where I can rest and I'm safe in here. So that's one tip. Just make the carrier not so scary. And then the other thing is get them used to like getting out and doing some things when they're younger. You know, put them in the carrier, get them used to the carrier first, but then put them in the car and just do a quick lap around the block. And then bring them back inside, give them a treat, play. Like, do all these sorts of things to desensitize them. For majority of our cats, they only get in the car when they're going to the vet. So, obviously, it's a traumatic thing for them.
So, what about the idea of, and it takes, you know, it takes time, what I'm about to suggest, desensitizing and counter-conditioning the cat to the carrier so the carrier becomes, if not a fun place to go, at least an acceptable place to go, and maybe drop treats in there randomly so it becomes a food dispenser, and then ultimately close the carrier, give your cat a tour of your house, let the cat out for dinner so something good happens after being in the carrier, then take your cat to the car, go nowhere, just come back up for food. Again, the cat associates being in the carrier with something good. Eventually, when the cat's not stressed out, and you know that, or think that, then drive around the block. And then the same thing, cat comes back for food. I mean, this is a laborious process, but I believe it's probably worth it. And eventually go to the veterinarian, but just for treats, not necessarily a veterinary visit, but rather a happy cat visit. Does that make you a happy veterinarian?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, exactly what you said. It's all about baby steps and just gradually conditioning them, you know. And you'll have a small percentage of cats who are just totally fine to jump in a carrier and go on an adventure, right? They just have that personality. But a lot of our cats are, you know, immediately get fear, anxiety, and stress when they go into that carrier, they go into the car, they're going to a vet clinic, all those smells. But absolutely, like work your way up to going in the vet clinic. And the vet clinic, the staff loves to see a cat, right? So even if you're walking in there and have, you know, one of the CSRs up front, give him a treat or just say, hey, can I go into an exam room and just let him chill for a second and get a weight on him, you know, baby steps. So they're getting used to that. I love that.
if you happen to get a cat, and listen, it's great if you adopt a 6 or 8 year old cat or whatever, or a cat with special needs like people I know happen to do, Dr. McGlasson. However, if you happen to get a kitten, then it's really easy to do this. It doesn't take much work at all because the kitten's never previously had a negative experience. So it's all positive.
Exactly. And I think that's really key with kittens. Like, you know, most kittens are just up for an adventure anytime. You know, they just love it. And you're going to have to naturally go to the vet multiple times when they're kittens just because of those wellness schedules and those types of things. But, yeah, doing it with a kitten is going to be much, much easier for sure.
All right. We were talking about training cats. I'm of the notion that we all should. I mean, if cats are, and I ask this at veterinary meetings, who's smarter, cats or dogs? Or maybe they're about the same. And it doesn't matter what the answer is, really. They're sort of in the same league, right? And if they are, then why wouldn't we challenge their intellect and give them interesting things to learn like we do dogs? And to me, also, that enhances the human-animal bond. And if we know our cats better, maybe we will know when they're not feeling well a little better. Make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think huge. I think the biggest thing that I heard there is you know, strengthening that human-animal bond. And any activity you can do with your pet that's, like, special between you and your cat, you know, we all have these little routines and the way we talk to our pets and our nicknames for them and all that embarrassing stuff that we won't talk about on the air right now. But that's what makes that relationship so special, right? It's really, really important.
Well, in fact, last week we were talking to comedian Drew Lynch, who stutters. And he was saying when he talks to his dog, or when he talked to his dog, he didn't stutter. And to me, that's fascinating. And I asked him why. He doesn't know the answer completely, but he said in part it's because he has no inhibitions, because his dog isn't going to care if he stutters or he doesn't stutter.
Exactly. I think that's one of the the great things about that relationship you have with your pet. You know, we make jokes about how our cats judge us for sure, and our dogs don't judge us. But in reality, your cat doesn't. I mean, they have a look like they judge you, but your cat accepts you for who you are, right? So you can just be yourself around your cat when no one's there, and you know, that's one of the great things about it.
And the thing about cats is if you do train your cat, and you can, to do, I would argue, anything a dog can do, and perhaps the cat will do it better. You must use positive reinforcement, because if you use punishment-based training in any way, you're going to get the middle digit right back at you with a cat.
Exactly, exactly. How could you ever do negative reinforcements with a cat? That's so mean. Yeah,
well, it's mean.
People think dogs are so easy to train because they're really food-motivated, you know, with treats and things like that, but cats are too, you know. All it takes is a little lick of churu, and I can pretty much get my cats to do anything.
All right. And your cats probably can get you to do anything. Maybe they will write the next book. But this book, How to Rate a Cat, Dr. Matthew McGlasson, a pleasure to talk to you on WGN. We've all heard the expression, monkey see, monkey do. Well, it can be cat see, cat do, because cats, we now know through a recent study, communicate just that way with one another, or potentially with us. Here's what I mean. Cats, try this with your cat. Your cat is somewhat relaxed, and slowly blink at your cat. Close your eyes, open them, close again, open them. You know what blinking is, of course. Well, the cat is likely to do this right back at you. And we've always thought the cats don't communicate with their faces. Dead wrong. There's lots of communication that goes on with, though they have a limited ability because they don't have the musculature as human beings or as dogs even, they do communicate a lot using their ears and their whiskers and their eyes. You can read more about it on my website, stevedale.tv. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.